Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness, and we'll be taking your calls. We also have a special guest today who will be on the air with us today. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and I'm excited to announce that we have a special guest today. I'd like to welcome Anne Danley, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murfrees, California.
Thank you, Michael. Hi.
Great to have you on the air.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, so what are we going to talk about today?
Well, I thought I heard you say we're going to talk about conscious, compassionate awareness.
That's great. It's a favorite topic of mine. Well, depending on who's here inside.
Right.
So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I understand we have a caller already.
We do.
I'd like to welcome Beth from Pittsburgh. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Hi, Beth.
Hey, Ann.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I wanted to kind of report on some meditation buddies. Yeah. Yeah, I've had a, I got two mice.
Two mice? Yes, who have joined you for meditation?
Yes, well, I have also two cats. And for the last 20 minutes, the three of us and a neighbor's cat have been sitting watching the mouse hole, waiting for the mice to appear.
The three of you being the two cats and you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And have they appeared?
Not yet. Which makes it a great meditation activity, kind of sitting and watching the mouse hole.
And have they ever appeared? Do they ever come?
Oh, yes, they do. They do. It's getting close to the time when they want to be more active.
To the time of day when they want to be more active?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So any moment now they're going to come out and play. But it's kind of like watching my cats sit and watch the mouse hole.
Uh-huh.
And just the stillness that they have.
Uh-huh. Yes. We're very attentive and aware.
Yes.
Yeah, in fact, it's a great metaphor because, you know, I'm sure you've heard that description of meditation being like a cat ready to pounce.
Yes.
So you're right there, you're still, and all of your attention is right there in that moment.
Right.
And have you noticed anything about their posture?
They get very relaxed.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're not asleep.
Right.
I mean, they're not
definitely, because they're quite interested to find out what's going to happen with that mouse hole.
Right.
And if they go to sleep, they're not going to find out.
Right.
But what you're saying is important. You notice that their body is relaxed.
Very relaxed.
So it's not like they're holding a lot of tension waiting to pounce. I would think it's more that they're relaxed, and yet they're right there, aware, attentive, and very interested to see what's going to happen.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I find that for me personally, getting to the cushion sometimes is, it ebbs and flows.
The motivation to get to the cushion?
Right.
Uh-huh.
But I'm spending at least an hour and a half a day sitting watching the mice.
Watching the cats watch the hole or watching the mice?
Watching for the mice to come out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so it's like, I mean, most of the time it's just this empty cage. You know, the wheel is there, but it's not moving. They have their burrows that they go in and out of.
Oh, these are pet mice.
These are pet mice.
Were mice that had taken uninvited house guests.
No, I actually bought these guys.
Oh, okay.
Yes. No, they're welcome visitors.
Uh-huh.
They're in a tank.
Uh-huh. So the hole, even if they came out of the hole, the mice aren't going to be able to pounce on them because it's in a protected area.
Right, they're protected.
Okay.
Yes. That's a very big concern, keeping the mice safe.
Yes. So what you're noticing is that sometimes it's hard for you to get to the cushion, and yet you can watch those mice for an hour and a half a day.
Easily. Yeah, and I have a bench set up in front of the tank. so that I can fit.
Uh-huh. So you can sit and watch the mice.
Yes. And usually there's nothing. There's just a still life.
In the tank.
Scene. Yes, because they're buried in their burrows.
Uh-huh. So let me ask you this, Beth. What do you think the difference is between the motivation to want to sit there and watch an empty tank versus sit there and look at a blank wall?
I think I do for others what I won't do for myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you do for others, in this case, the mice?
Yes. Even though they don't have any concern whatsoever about
And what
watch.
Are you what are you doing for them?
It's a sense of companionship.
Uh-huh. So you're willing to be to sit there with them.
Yeah.
And be a companion to them.
Yes.
Ah, which is a wonderful metaphor for meditation, isn't it? That you could sit there and be a companion to all of those parts of you inside.
Yes. Yes. Who are deeply burrowed in the nesting material.
Yeah, yeah. What a great metaphor.
And what I've noticed is that they're really experts about sticking their nose out
and smelling to see what's going on out there.
Yes, and it's like I could be sitting here watching this particular hole, and they will move so slowly that their whole head will be out before I've noticed any movement whatsoever.
Wow, wow. And what do you project is going on with them?
Well, I think that's the other thing I've been kind of learning from watching them is just the fear cycle about protecting themselves and what they do to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, I do have two cats, so they do have some concern with being safe.
Mm-hmm.
But my fear is a huge motivating factor in my life,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
is the drive to be safe. And it's like I have the same behaviors.
Where you put your nose out very slowly into new situations and move very cautiously?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and I'll put my nose out there in such a way that you won't even notice it's out until it's out.
Uh-huh, until maybe your whole head is exposed.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And just kind of like, the darting and the burrowing and kind of only playing with no one else is around.
Uh-huh. Only coming out of your hole when no one else is around, so it's really safe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I've been kind of watching that whole dynamic.
Of the way you will only come
projecting.
Out and play when
I've
no one else
watching,
is around.
I've been projecting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've been projecting onto these mice, yes.
Yeah, yeah, the projecting the fear and the need for safety and all of that. Well,
right.
I really love that. I'm going to have to take that into my practice. I love that idea of thinking about all these little scared animals inside of me who really need somebody to sit there with them and let them know it's okay to come out.
And usually, it's like when I first come into the kitchen, I'm banging around and pots and pans, the lights come on, and it's obviously, the sign to scurry. But when I sit and I'm just like the cat at the mouse hole, and I come to a place of stillness. After about 20 minutes, a half an hour, the mice will come out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, are you talking about the mice? The mice you just
Literally.
Bought, or the mice metaphorically inside of you?
Actually, yeah, the mice that I just bought.
Uh-huh. So if you're sitting in a place of stillness after all the clanking of the pans and all that, and you're just sitting and there's calmness and stillness, I'm sensing that you project they notice that. And they feel that it's safe to come out,
right?
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's true for the parts inside of you as well.
Yeah, I think it is really true.
Mm-hmm.
I think because after I meditate and after I find that place of stillness, then.
Mm-hmm. It's like somebody has turned their attention to those parts burrowed deep inside and said, I see you. It's okay. I want to be with you.
Yeah. It's time to come out.
It's time to come out. And it's okay to come out.
It's
and also, it sounds like it's okay not to come out if you don't want to. But
exactly.
I'm here and I'm sitting with you.
Right. I have nothing invested. I have nothing invested.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to come out or they don't want to come out.
No standards. No demand.
Right.
Yeah. It's such a wonderful way to describe meditation. You know, it really is to me, it's a great motivation of, yeah, you know, I every day I want to sit with those parts of me who are scared and hiding and let them know it's okay. I'm right here. And I have time for you, and I want to make time for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've been kind of looking at control issues.
Mm-hmm.
It's like how to live my life effectively without having any control.
Yeah, like we talk about a lot, taking full responsibility without taking control.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's exactly it. That's mm-hmm. exactly it. Because what I'm finding, it's like the more control I take over it, the more worry there is.
Yeah.
Right,
that's a great way to think about it because, you know, we don't have any control, but when we attempt to have control over something we have no control over, of course worry would come with that because there's all these things that could happen and then I'm responsible and it's my fault and all of that burden gets placed on us.
Yes, and it's up to me.
Oh, yes, and everything's up to you, right? You're the
yes,
center
exactly.
of the universe.
Exactly, I'm the center of the universe.
mm-hmm. And what a different way to live, to just to really be fully there and present and living your life and realizing, well, it's not up to me.
It's not up to me.
Not that I'm not going to show up and I'm not going to give it everything I've got, but, you know, I have no control
yes.
over the results.
Or even the process. I mean,
or even the process, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's what happens isn't really up to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's so hard for us to get because we're so conditioned to believe that it is and that, you know, if we're the right person, things are going to turn out the right way, and if we would just do it right, then life would be right, and, you know, none of that's true.
It's really not. And it's like when I'm at the monastery and nothing is in my control, it's kind of easy because it's not my fault.
Right.
But it's kind of like when I get out here in the other world.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like there's a part of me that believes that it's up to me.
Uh-huh. And so then what I'm hearing you say is then it becomes hard because there's a part of you
because
that's believing
capable.
That it is your fault.
It is my fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to me and it's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of like looking at, you know, it's that space of it being up to me, meaning that I'm giving it everything I've got. But I have no control over it.
Right.
I'm just showing up with everything I've got.
Yes, because what conditioning would have us believe, well, if I don't have any control, then forget it. I'm not even going to be engaged. Why should I even bother? Who cares? I should just be apathetic.
Yes.
But to really give it everything you've got, as you say, and be totally engaged and completely there and alive, realizing, you know, it's not up to me. I don't have any control.
Yeah. And when you said it, being completely alive, it's like when I'm trying to control things, I'm not really alive.
Right, because in control, we're trying to make things static and make them go a certain way, and
yes.
It's dead.
It is dead, because that's the only way to control it.
Yeah, and being alive, it's full of surprises and unknown. And
song.
And what?
And song.
Song?
Yeah.
Huh?
It's like when my line of work is cleaning. So it's like I can show up with an agenda of what needs to be done and how it needs to be done and in what order, and then it's drudgery. And by the end of the job, I'm exhausted. But
uh-huh.
when I kind of show up just to show up, and this is what needs to happen, and then that thing needs to happen, and then by the end of the work period, I'm singing.
Uh-huh. So if you're there and really there being present to the cleaning, it becomes a joyful task.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I'm not tired.
You're not tired?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's not that worry and that control and, oh, my gosh, it's all up to me. You can let go into whatever you're doing and really be there with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Yes. It's fun.
It becomes fun, yes. That feels really important. Yeah, if we're able to let go and realize we don't have any control, we can actually enjoy it.
Right. I mean, there's a part of me that really, really has struggled with not wanting to let go of control. I mean, this has been a major issue for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can go and give up control when I'm at the monastery, but when I'm out here, I need to have control.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of finding that, just like at the monastery, I don't really need the control.
Mm-hmm.
I just need to show up.
Yes, you don't need the control. You need, yeah, you, yeah. Well, it sounds like you have a focus for practice.
Yes, yes.
You can look at your whole relationship with control and needing to control and see who all those parts are and how they come out and interact with each other.
And actually, my relationship with the mice is that way, too, because, you know, the mice are mine. I bought them.
So you're responsible. So
I'm responsible. They're under my control.
Mm-hmm.
But the more they're under my control, the more they're hiding.
Aha. Uh-huh. Maybe they sense the danger in someone trying to control.
Yes, and there's no joy in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But when I can just sit and let them be, then, you know, there's just such delight in their antics. And
yeah, when you can just, yeah, and it sounds like it's the same thing when you're cleaning. If you can let it be, there's joy there. There's delight there.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you, Beth. It sounds like
thank
you're
you,
looking
Anne.
At a lot, and thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have a special guest with us today. Anne Danley is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California. So if you want to call us, please feel free to give us a call. You can reach us toll-free in North America at 866-613-1612. We'd love to hear from you today. And we have another caller.
Oh, great.
I'd like to welcome Judith from Northern California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Judith.
Hi, Ann and Michael.
Hi.
I've been enjoying the show for months and really wanted to call in, and finally it happened.
Well, good for you.
So thanks for being there on the other end.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, when you don't live close to the monastery or a local practice group, the radio show is really a lifeline, and combined with the email classes when they're happening and the new Reflective Listening Buddies program, it's just a godsend.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's really great to have support for practice, isn't it?
It sure is, and that Reflective Listening Buddies program has made a big difference in my life. So
good.
Thank you for making that happen. And I just wanted to... Well, just listening to what you were talking about while I was waiting was very helpful. It's funny how anybody talking about practice, it can be just exactly what we need to hear, isn't it?
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. That's that somebody looking at something, if we can really take it in, we can see how we can benefit from what they're looking at as well.
Yeah. 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 So I noticed over Thanksgiving, some of the fruits of practice made themselves apparent. It's often a challenging time for me, this period of this couple months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And this first hump.
The first hump is Thanksgiving?
Yeah. I noticed that... there was a difference this time in my experience. It seemed like there was a little kind of layer of space around me.
Wow. But that's great, isn't it? A little layer of space. Even if it's very thin, it's distinct and it's there, and it's almost like a little breathing room, huh?
You said it. That is exactly what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
There's just that much space and breathing room between me and the identification with the person who was suffering.
Yes. So there's that person in you who suffers at Thanksgiving, we would think, every year for a very long time. And then because of practice, you see that there's starting to be a little space between that part of you and the awareness that that's going on.
Yes. This is, you know, we all have our areas where it's hard not to be totally identified, and this is one of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see that I am not that person.
Uh-huh.
To really see that while it's happening. This is a huge gift.
Uh-huh. That you are not the person who is suffering.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the person in the story, you know.
Yeah, what a gift, huh? To realize that here is this person who lives in a story, and you can see what the story is, and you can see that this person suffers over this, and you're not that person trapped in the story.
Yeah, now, I'm wondering, is it true that I'm not the person having the experience? It almost seemed like I'm not the person having the experience, but maybe that's because I was seeing the experience as a story.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like there was some distance that, you know, that maybe you moved, I don't know if this was the case, but that you might have moved in and out of it. But there was that, like you said, that layer of space.
Yeah.
It's almost like having a different place you can stand in to experience the experience.
Yep, yes.
So that before all you the only place you could stand was in the shoes of the person who believed the story and thought the story was real. And suffered over the story, and now there's a place you can go where that it's a space where you can see, oh, there's that person who believes that story and really suffers over it.
Yeah. So like you said, there's just a thin layer of relief.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still going through whatever I'm going through, and there's still reactions.
Mm-hmm.
There was some, you know, resistance to some of the experiences I was having. There was some emotions about it, I should say, like, I don't like this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be here. And then I decided to leave wherever I was after my obligation was done, my time period that I agreed to be somewhere was done. And somehow there wasn't a lot of extra stuff on top of that where I didn't have to feel bad about leaving.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have to feel bad about not enjoying the experience. And I realized this was such an easier way to go through the experience. I mean, there was still the experience and there was still the emotions about the experience, but there wasn't a lot of judgment on top of it.
Mm-hmm. 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 Which does make it so much easier and does create that layer of space, huh? Because there's that person who's suffering, who doesn't like the experience, who has all this emotion about it, who wants to leave, and so that happens, and that's fine with you. You know, there's no judgment. It's fine.
Yeah.
And that creates, even though it's the same suffering, it sounds like it's a completely different experience because there's no judgment over the fact that you're having that experience.
It's such a sort of a elimination of wasted energy. It's an energy saver.
It's a what?
An energy saver. Not
an energy saver, yes.
The judgment on it, because then it just frees up, the rest of the day.
Yeah, all that energy that's now available for you.
Yeah, and it doesn't get filled up with, why did you do that? Why did you... You know, there's so many ways I could have gotten beaten for that.
Right. It doesn't get used by self-hate. It doesn't get sucked out of you and used against you.
Yeah, and this was a tremendous relief.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very grateful. And, you know, I'm thinking that all these, what's it been, about 5 years now of daily sitting, and the time I spent close to the monastery doing regular participation as much as I could is, it all pays off, and I didn't realize it at the time. You know, I don't really see it the way some people talk about their experience of meditation, seeing things while sitting. I don't often see things while sitting. I practice. I watch myself thinking and come back to the breath, and it doesn't seem like a lot is happening, and I enjoy doing it, and so I do it every day. But it seems like it's only at times like this where I see, you know, the progress that has been made or the benefit that has accrued or something like that.
Right, yes. I mean, I think that's so important what you're saying, that, you know, okay, I sit every day and it doesn't seem like anything's different. I'm just sitting every day. And and then you go into one of those places that is habitually really difficult for you and hard for you. And then there's that, like you said, that layer of space, or we could even say, some compassionate awareness, somebody who's there with you to go through it, to experience it with you, to go through it, and you realize, wow, sitting really, really is what creates that ability.
Yeah, and just practicing using the tools, you know, projection is a really valuable tool for me. And working with the subpersonalities. When I found myself in this unpleasant situation and I knew that a part of me was suffering, and when this happens, a lot of times all I can think of to do is to be the mentor and say, I'm here with you. I'm here with you. And you know, that does a lot.
Yeah.
I really think it does.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And, you know, and one thing you said I want to underline is just feeling a lot of gratitude. And that is certainly my experience. You know, what an amazing amount of gratitude there is for this practice and having it available for us.
Yeah, and that helps create that ever-expanding faith we talk about in the daily
life. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, great, Judith. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
It's great to hear your voice.
You too. Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us, Judith. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, in our second segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on compassionate awareness and taking your calls. And we have a special guest with us today, so keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and I'm excited because we have a very special guest with us today. Ann Danley is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California, and she's with us for today's show.
Well, I'm excited to be here, Michael.
Great. And I'm excited we have another caller.
Oh, great.
I'd like to welcome Dawn from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi. I've been listening to some of the archives, and I came across one where Sherry was talking to a gal who, they were having a conversation where Sherry said, you know, you must still think that there are mistakes. I guess this woman was very regretful.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like what Sherry had to say about it, where it's kind of like almost, you know, if you would have done this and then you would have done that, like out of a science fiction film, you know, who knows, you could be dead kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm struggling with it, and I just hope that you can expand on it, where I'm having a lot of trouble forgiving myself for maybe the way I was or the way I treated people before I found this practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there's anything, I mean, I think that's still my ego and my conditioning trying to beat me up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a difficult time directing my attention away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like I'm living with it almost constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had any sort of insight as to, you know, I am meditating, I'm in a Zen group, and it's just constant. It's like wakes me up in the middle of the night kind of thing.
Uh-huh. And so the story is it kind of just constantly replays the way you used to be and how could you have been that way and look what you did to people?
Yes, and it's specific. Michael will know who I am when I say this. Specific to my marriage ending.
Uh-huh.
How I was so awful to my ex-husband and I treated him really badly.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it finally got to a breaking point. And I can never get him back. I mean, I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of just learning to live with what is and how it did fall apart.
Uh-huh.
And instead I'm and it's been a couple years and it's like I'm tormented by it. It really is.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I have moments of, oh, why even go on, and I can't believe I treated him so badly, because I finally can see where I was just taking all of my self-hatred out on him. He was the punching bag.
Uh-huh.
And like any person would, he got tired of it.
Uh-huh. And you've gotten to a place where you can see that, and it's being used against you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the what's getting lost in that is the person who's experiencing the loss of that relationship and is grieving and has all these feelings about that. Instead, self-hate has grabbed the whole thing and said, you know, you were basically the wrong person.
Right.
And if you had just been the right person, this wouldn't have happened to you.
Right. And if I would have been sweet and kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll even go so far as to, like, fantasize that I am sweet and kind and kind of replay, you know, and then I'd still be with him and,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything would be swell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, getting caught up in that is, I mean, I'm finding it, to be very honest, I'm finding it almost impossible to direct my intention back. And this is months, you know, I started this up probably 8 months ago.
The Zen. You started sitting practice eight months ago.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I know that's only a short period of time, but I'm just, it's very discouraging. And I mean, I don't want to alarm anyone, but like there's moments where I'm like, oh, why even go on? And am I going to be feeling this way for 10 years? Because it's so incredibly distracting.
Uh-huh. To have that storyline going on inside your head.
Oh, yeah. And it's all I can do, like not, you know, because he's not well known, but he's Googleable. You can Google him very easily. Mm-hmm. And it's all I can do to not, like, almost cyber stalking, where it's like, you know, Googling him and trying to figure out what he's doing and where he's mm-hmm. working. And it's like it's a battle every day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, Dawn, it sounds to me like there's somebody really mourning the loss of that relationship is getting lost in all of this.
Yeah.
So what happens to her? What happens to that part of you?
She gets beat up.
Yeah.
I deserve this. And then even if I'm having conversations, see, now I'm going to start to cry. I'm going to try not to. Hold on.
Well, you know, maybe that would be the direction to go in, is to not try not to, is to let that part of you have her emotions. Let her cry, you know, for as long as she needs to.
But what if it's years? It could be years of crying.
Well, I'll tell you a little story that happened to me, which Michael's shaking his head because he's heard it. When I first came to this practice, I remember, I can even just visualize this, and I'm sitting there, you know, crying, and basically had the same response you did, and Sherry said, be my guest to go outside and cry as long as you want to. I don't think the record is even an hour.
Oh, okay.
Because what the voice is basically telling you is that if you let yourself feel what you're going to feel, it's going to last forever. But this is a world of duality, and actually the opposite is true. Because if you don't feel what you're feeling, all of those voices and all that story you're caught in is going to last forever.
Right.
The person in there who's having those emotions and feeling those feelings needs to have a safe space created for her where she can come out and feel them for as long as she needs to feel them. And, you know, if it's going to be a year,
yeah,
you know, that's you got to get to the place where you can say to her, you know, sweetie, that's fine with me.
Okay.
And all that story does is serve to keep you away from feeling the feelings.
Yes.
And the only road to healing is to move towards the feelings and let them be felt.
Okay. So hard, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because do you know what the storyline is for you, what the belief is about? I mean, one of them obviously is, well, I can't do that because what if it lasts for years? But
right.
what are you told is hard about it?
I'm just kind of afraid.
Uh-huh.
I'm afraid to lose control like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm afraid if I get really upset, then I'm going to end up, you know, calling him crying, or like it's going to spin out of control.
Uh-huh. So there's a fear of losing control.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do instead is I, you know, hop on the computer, and then I Google him, and then I find mm-hmm. out what he's doing and, you know, who he's with, and then I start with those stories.
Yeah. Yeah, and the person inside of you who needs your attention is lost.
Yeah.
Is turned away from. She really needs somebody to be there with her, you know, and to say, you know, that's what your meditation time could be, you know. I really want to, kind of what we were talking with Beth at the beginning, that here are these parts of you who are buried deep inside, who have all of these emotions.
Right.
And need somebody to be there with them and sit with them. And let them feel whatever they need to feel. And it includes the part of you who's afraid. So that's where you could start. Okay, there's that part who's totally afraid to go there and lose control. Okay, that's fine that part's there. Tell me about that. Tell me about that experience. What are you afraid of? What's so bad about losing control? That's fine.
Yeah. You know, and I realized it was interesting because now since I've done this, I've looked at my family of origin very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, you know, I said to my mother over Thanksgiving, I also just recently lost my job, which is not a bad thing. But I said, gosh, I feel like such a loser. And you know what she said to me? No, you don't. That's what she said to me. And it, what occurred to me is that she's been saying that to me forever. No, you don't.
And, Don, what would you have wanted her to say to you when you said that?
Something to the effect of, like, I'm really sorry that this has happened to you.
Yeah, I am and so sorry this has happened to you.
Some empathy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I had that on one end, and then I had a father who was the control, don't lose control, and would start screaming, you know? So I'm noticing it now, which is wonderful, because when I was caught up in that marriage treating everyone horribly, I didn't know.
Right.
So I'm just hoping some good could come from it, because it's been really, really painful.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you know, now that you see all of this, you're the person you can start with. You're the person that you can extend empathy to.
But how do you, so that's like kind of the crux of my question, though, like of how do I do that when I still have this, the minute I start to extend the empathy, because I've tried practicing with it a little bit, I just get completely taken over by the conditioning of, what are you doing crying? This is all your fault, and, you know, you deserve this, and you're never going to meet anybody else, and, you know, all of that. And that's where, is it just a matter of just sticking with it and continuing to just come back and come back, and, you know, is there any trick? I mean, really, because I know about this directing attention. I've even seen, you know, I've been to workshop with Sherry and everything. And I call Michael, tell you, I've called like five times. But just the where it takes over, I give into it. I end up giving. I end up giving into it.
Well, you end up believing it, right?
Yeah.
So you start to extend. What I'm hearing is you start to extend empathy to yourself, and allow create a space where those feelings can come up, and then this really strong, harsh, judgmental voice comes in and says, "What are you doing crying? It's all your fault."
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a couple of ways to work with that. I mean, when you first said, is there any trick, I kind of smiled because I thought, well, yeah, the breath is the trick, you know, to bring all of your attention back to the breath. And sometimes, in my experience, those voices are so strong. One of the things you can do, especially, you know, when they're pounding you at your most vulnerable, is you just start writing down exactly what they're saying to you. You know, so there you are, starting to mourn and feel the feelings and of how painful it is, and this really cruel, mean voice comes in saying, why are you crying? It's all your fault. And just write it down. Take your hand, get your pencil, and just start writing down all the mean things it's saying to you.
Okay.
Because it's not true, and I hear that it's really, really believable, and one of the ways to get some distance from it and see that it's not believable is to write it down. You know, even, you know, you can be sobbing as you're writing it down and you're really believing it. Just realize, okay, I'm going to write this down because I know someplace in me this is self-hate and it's not true. And if somebody was saying this to my best friend, you know, I would tell them whatever you would say to them.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Because, you know, I mean,
the mentoring thing that Sherry talks about.
Pardon?
The mentoring that Sherry talks about.
Yes.
Okay.
Because, you know, going through a breakup of a relationship is a really hard thing for anybody to go through. Mm-hmm. And then to have on top of that all of that self-hate about how it's your fault and if you were just a different person and, oh, my gosh, I mean, what a hard thing to have to experience.
Oh, it's made it unbearable.
Yeah.
So can you become
the person who's going to be there and step between that hateful, judgmental voice who's pounding on this poor person who's in pain?
Yeah. It's so interesting, Anne, because even as we're talking, you say this poor person is in pain, and right away my mind goes to, but I deserve the pain.
So you'd want to write that down as one of the beliefs, one of the voices.
You said it, I went right there.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah,
I'm gonna try that. I mean, I want to stick with this because I'm very hopeful that this is the answer. You know,
and I would really encourage you, Don, to take There Is Nothing Wrong with You retreat because it addresses specifically this whole process and gives you some really concrete tools.
Okay.
So I would set that up as a goal for yourself for next year is to get yourself to a There Is Nothing Wrong with You retreat.
I will. I'm trying. I'm trying to get in on the next one. I actually
Great.
Was so desperate the other day that I emailed just show up there, and obviously it doesn't work. It's not that loose.
For December, you mean for the December, there's nothing wrong with you?
Well, that one's full, but just in general.
Yeah.
Kind
well,
of
I think
up.
We have another one scheduled, I believe, in February. I don't think it's on the website yet, but if you talk to the registration office, they can let you know when the next one is. And see about getting yourself there, because it
will.
Would really help in this process.
I will. I hope so. Thank you for your time.
Okay,
I very
Don.
Much
Thanks so much
it.
For calling.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Don. Thanks for calling, Don. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have a special guest. Anne, a monk, is with us today. And we have another caller.
Oh, my heavens, great.
I'd like to welcome George from Pennsylvania. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hey, George.
Hi, Anne.
Great to hear you. Great to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I've been going through, you were just talking about writing it down. I have been going through a slide into depression.
Mm.
This is something that I have done on a regular basis pretty much all my life,
mm-hmm.
at least since I was in late teens, and
mm-hmm.
I'm 63 now. So it's, And it's always been, you know, it's been like a 6 month on, 6 month off kind of thing. I mean, psychiatry would term it some kind of bipolar
mm-hmm.
or experience.
Mm-hmm. And you're kind of in the first month of the slide into the depression,
right?
Uh huh.
Right. And so, it's a very interesting time. Painful, but very interesting at the same time.
Uh-huh, yeah, and what a great attitude of mind to have with that to take an attitude of mind of interest.
Well, I think it's you know, I've been to a couple of There's Nothing Wrong With You retreats, and I've been to a couple other retreats, one of them in Pittsburgh, and I've been working really hard with Sherry's teachings and doing everything that I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I do every morning after meditation is I do some journaling. And here's what self-hate, I mean, this just came right out. It was I started writing, and I couldn't believe what self-hate was telling me. And it was almost unconscious, but here's what it was. You're a baby, you're a wimp, you're a loser, you can't do anything right, you're ignorant, you're worthless, you're a piece of crap, you are really screwed up, you are helpless, you might as well give up, you might as well kill yourself, you are a mess, you are terrible, you're not a good person, you are pathetic, you are mentally ill, no good to anyone, shame on you.
Mm. Mm. Boy, anybody living with that would be depressed.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the mentor came in. Then I always follow with the mentor and let the mentor come in.
Mm-hmm.
First thing mentor said, nice capture of self-hate.
Good job, George. Same, yeah.
And then can you see how ridiculous that all is?
Yeah.
How can you possibly believe that? Nothing but insidious, vicious lies,
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth. So that actually, that little session there picked me up out of, I was already really feeling really depressed. That picked me up for about an hour or
mm-hmm.
so, an hour and a half, and then it all came back again.
Yeah, to like you were saying, to capture, to be able to take something that's operating on the subconscious level or right below the level of consciousness and really manipulating our emotions and be able to put it out there and see, oh, my heavens, this is what I'm being told on a subconscious level and realize, oh, my heavens, this is not true.
Yeah. And yet there's a part of me that, as that's going on subconsciously or whatever it is, there's a part of me that's going on believing it.
Right. Yeah, and that's where the mentoring comes in and is so important, because that's the person that you need to mentor and be with and sit with and constantly reassure that, you know, it's not true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It almost seems like literally a full-time job, as though I would have time to do nothing else during the day except that, because
uh-huh.
it rushes back in so quickly. So here's another thing that came to me today, and that is I realized that that there is a lot of shame around this bipolar thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could very well be. I mean, I'm not in control here. We're not in, you know, I mean,
right.
we have influence on our lives, but we don't have control over our lives. And I realized that today, like, I just might have this bipolar condition for, you know, for my whole life.
Right. And it's
even though I want to solve it, I want to fix it, I want to change it, I want to make it better. I want to feel good all the time, you
mm-hmm.
know. But
who doesn't?
You know, maybe that's just, you know, that's just something that I don't have any control over.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I really don't have any control over that I'm going to have this pattern going on.
Right. That is just something that your mind does, and it has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
In a sense, this could be your best opportunity to learn how to be a mentor.
Yeah.
And to realize, wow, there's shame around this, and it doesn't have anything to do with me. It feels like a really huge step in that process.
Yeah, I mean, it seems as though, you know, I'm not accepting it.
Mm-hmm.
I am not accepting this depression. I have never accepted it, and the longer I don't accept it, the longer it hangs on.
Right.
Not accepting it is holding it in place.
Right. It's like we were talking with Dawn. If we're not letting those emotions through and trying to fix it and make it better and make it go away, then exactly, it's there to be healed. It's there for us to have the opportunity to sit with it, to bring conscious, compassionate awareness to it. And if we're judging it and holding it at bay, mm-hmm. it's never going to change because we're in a static relationship to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, keep us posted on how it goes.
I will do that.
All right, George.
I've been calling
for calling
pretty regularly, so I will keep you posted.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us, George. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We have another caller.
Great.
Again from the East Coast. I'd like to welcome Caverly from Charlottesville, Virginia. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi there, Anne. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Caverly.
So I actually unfortunately missed the beginning of the show, but I just felt struck by the last few callers that I heard. And I've just been having an amazing practice opportunity out here, a very good one and a big one. And I heard something recently that struck me so much, and I've been really affected by it. Can you guys hear me okay? I'm actually talking, unfortunately, on a cell phone.
We can hear you fine.
Okay, great. So it was so interesting. What this person was saying was that when we're in a place where everything in us is you know, either beating us for something we've done or telling us how terrible we are. This particular speaker was talking about how one way it could be looked at is that we're actually closer to who we really are than we realize.
Yes, because that voice of judgment is threatened because we're getting close to being free.
Well, you know, that is certainly my experience in our practice and as we always talk about. And then the speaker went on to say something that I had never really looked at in the same way before, and I just wanted to throw it out because I've really been working with it and it's been so helpful to me. I've been looking at the way in which, you know, when we're in that place where not only are we kind of heading in the right direction, so the voice is, of course, going to be screaming, I've been noticing how the very hardest places in me to accept, when that acceptance does come, it's not that I was, that if I'm there, you know, hating myself, that I'm close to who I really am because who I really am is a schmuck. It's that I'm close to who I really am because who I really am is the thing that can embrace the thing that's the very most unacceptable within my system.
Right. You're closest to the part of you that can extend the circle of compassion to that which that system of self-hate finds completely unacceptable.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things we talk about all the time in our practice. But to just really see, or just mostly to really experience for myself recently, the degree to which it's that very thing that is the hardest for me to accept that asks me to step into the largest place there is to step into.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. It invites you, yes, it invites you to become bigger than who you think you are.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it can sound kind of sadomasochistic to be kind of grateful for all these things that in the past have been, you know, the quote-unquote worst things about me, and yet it's not at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's those things that inspire me to become that bigger place.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know?
Those things, you have to. You're required to find that bigger space of compassion in order to break through the suffering.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, it's just been a really incredible time of having life push me into those places, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what a great place to be able to be in a place of gratitude for that, rather than oh why me or.
Gosh, I think that's such a good point because. It would be so easy, wouldn't it, just to say, gosh, why do I have to keep seeing these terrible things about myself, in quotes, you know, mm-hmm. these quote-unquote terrible things about myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you yeah. could say that the ability to see them is created by stepping into a larger place of compassion.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah. And if we're not careful, we're going to be seeing all this stuff with awareness, because we're paying attention, it's being revealed. But without that compassion, we're not being motivated to step into the larger place. We're just seeing stuff mm-hmm. that we use against ourselves.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that self-hate will just come in and say, see? And to
exactly.
constantly, you know, to constantly go to the place of compassion and, you know, and realize if a voice isn't speaking compassionately to me, it has nothing worthwhile to say.
Yep. That's such a good ground rule. I think it's always such a good, we should have bumper stickers to say that.
Yeah, why don't we have bumper stickers? We need a t-shirt.
I mean, seriously, because it's such a good just ground rule of, you know?
Yeah. So when, you know, like when Don was talking about that voice comes in and says, well, it's all your fault, you shouldn't be crying, and it's like, nope, that's not a compassionate voice, I'm not listening. I don't care.
Yeah,
I'm not listening, sorry.
Exactly. Yes. So there I am. I'm not listening, and not only am I not listening, but this is actually an opportunity. This moment is actually a golden moment for I feel like, as you were pointing out before, embracing the very thing that makes me feel worst about myself.
Right. To get to a place of realizing it has nothing to do with me, and this is my opportunity to extend compassion to an aspect that is suffering.
Yeah, and that I've never been able to extend compassion to before because, as you were saying, it's just outside that circle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
Yeah, so it's a good deal.
It is a good deal. We have a lot to be grateful for.
Yep.
Thanks for calling, Kaverly.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you guys.
Yes,
you too. Thanks for joining us, Kaverly. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. And we're coming to the end of the hour.
Well, I just want to say how much I appreciated being invited to be your guest. It was just a delight and a pleasure. I'm very grateful.
Great. I'm grateful, too. Thanks for taking the time to be here and joining us today. It's really wonderful. And we'll do it again.
Oh, I hope so.
All righty. Thank you. Good night. Mm-hmm.